Hello, and welcome to That's Life, Spectator Life's sideways glance at the world today. That's right, we've made it to a second episode, and trust me, nobody is more surprised at this than we are. I'm Benedict Spence.
And I'm Andy Shaw.
And on this podcast, we'll be sitting down with guests to open a few bottles of wine and drink our way through 40 minutes of poking fun at the words, people, events, and ideas that have shaped the current news agenda. On this episode, we're joined by the comedian Jeff Norcott. Jeff is the token Leave voter on the BBC show The MASH Report, which, for those of you who don't know, is Channel 4 News, but with fewer jokes. But never one to let circumstance get the better of him, he has overcome this and is currently embarking on a national tour of his latest show, Taking Liberties.
Jeff has written for The Daily Telegraph, The Independent and Spite, and the BBC recently appointed Jeff to their Diversity and Inclusion panel, where he represents the new protected minority of Tory voting comedians. Jeff, welcome to That's Life.
Thank you for having me on. I'm there representing the working classes, because after a few sort of convenings of this, they sort of thought, what about that huge demographic of people, like possibly the biggest underprivileged? Yeah, they should probably be in there at some point. So I am there. I'm not saying that right now my life is not. I've known the taste of brioche, right? But I've also been on the other side of the fence. I'm trying to give a voice to that.
Well, help yourself to a glass of wine, Jeff. And you're no stranger to podcasts, are you? You've got your own called What Most People Think.
Yes.
And
I claim to be able to get to the heart of the everyman stance on everything.
Well, we're right in the middle of an election campaign now. So what do most people think? Has there been a moment of the current campaign that stood out for you?
Well, I think that for most people, this is an election about avoiding things. So your choice will be based on what do I want to avoid the most. And a lot of people, it will be sort of quasi or fully socialist government under Corbyn. It might be Joe Swinson just annoying the shit out of everybody by being Joe Swinson. It might be the Green Party, committing to frankly ridiculous carbon neutral targets. So for a lot of people, I understand in certain circles, Boris does kind of get people going. For my brand of conservatism, I think that it's a... I would vote for probably anybody that was serious about getting Brexit done at this point. Mm-hmm. And Boris is definitely the best. Although you can't call him Boris because apparently that humanises him because he's not human. I heard that, somebody said that to me the other day. He said, you can't call him Boris. It's just, it humanises him. It's not fair on Jeremy. I was like, you just called him Jeremy. but Jeremy's nice and he is human.
But what about Joe?
What about Joe? I have this theory of Joe Swinson that you cannot say just one of her names because people won't know who you're talking about. So when you said Joe, I was just like, who?
Well, if you say maybe Joe, the sort of angry primary school teacher who seems to hate her kids, maybe that would be better.
You've got to say Joe Swinson. You have to say Joe Swinson, otherwise... And if you just say Swinson, people are like, what is it? What even is that?
In fairness, I think that was the response of all the networks as well when they were going to do the debates. What about Joe? What about Joe?
Yeah, I mean, she got bent out of shape about that, didn't she? And she sort of had the reaction of any comedian that's struggling to get on a panel show. She's like, I should be on that because... and it just sort of came up because we need to be reminded that Britain could have a female prime minister. You go, it would be awful if there was no recent sort of legacy of female prime ministers in this country. I mean...
Yeah, maybe she needs something, really, really interesting to say. I mean, there have been some fairly radical pronouncements come out. Labour Party free broadband?
Yes. I mean, that is, if you had like a comedy thing, like something that Labour would offer under pressure, free broadband, is it? Like, I would imagine if you backed Jeremy Corbyn into a debate corner, he'd just, free broadband. That's what he would say. Just free, what was that? Free broadband. Did you hear me? Instinctively, they defer to something that they think young people would like because they're obsessed with youth at the expense of, I mean, maybe, it's laying the foundations for finally getting a majority in like 2048. But that is their go-to, thing, free broadband. And also what was funny about it is it sounds sort of abstract, doesn't it? Like, because it's something that's in the ether, isn't it? It's like promising like free relaxation. Like, it's not, a great thing about the internet is it's not owned by the state. It is a strange pledge because we all know with like free broadband is it tends to be a loss leader for a wider deal that's shit. So it's like that's how they sort of get you, isn't it? A free broadband, you go, oh my God, I actually can never leave this. It's like the mafia.
That's right. You imagine ringing up customer services. It's going to be terrible, isn't it? So, hello, sir. I've got a really dodgy internet connection. Well, I'm just looking at your records here, and it appears that you've been slightly insulting to David Lammy on Twitter. And perhaps you'd like to complete the sort of inclusion questionnaire and diversity training, and then we can reconsider connecting you back into the internet.
Yes, we feel like your broadband speed could go up if you if you were to comply with certain criteria.
These foreign call centres seem to have changed their accents dramatically.
Yeah, it was just like a reflexive thing, and also felt like at the stage of the campaign that they did it, it signalled a certain desperation, because there's still a lot of campaigning to go. Same with the Tories as well. They've thrown a lot of spending pledges out before manifestos were even launched, so I don't really know where it goes from here. I suppose in a way the Tories might be trying to open up one of those unassailable leads, you know, like in long distance running where the other guys just think, oh, fuck it, you know what I mean, we can't make that up, let's just throw free stuff into the crowd, you know, like... Let's just enjoy it. I think Jeremy will enjoy it. He loves campaigning.
But he's been doing it for... I mean, he has largely made the same speech for about 40 years. And just give some slightly different variants on it. So he's
always been on the right side of history, apart from all the times that he was on the wrong side of history. But, you know, he, by the way, I don't know, a lot of people don't realise, he was the only person to oppose apartheid. It was just him with this board. There's a photo of it. And it was just him in London at that point.
He's fantastic, you know? Isn't he?
And I think it's totally right that the left credit him almost unilaterally with freeing Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, it's fantastic,
Because of, you know, him hanging around protesting. He's a protest politician that somehow... It's a bad Hollywood film, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's
a disaster movie is what it is.
Yeah, I do think that they're going to get spanked at this election, actually.
It's difficult to say, isn't it? No, I get that feeling as well. You speak to so many people who think, I just can't vote for it. It's just too mad. Mm. It's just, and also there is this sense of people just want to break the impasse.
Yeah.
And they know that with Labour, it's just going to...
It's going to be two referendums within whatever time frame you want it. It's good, 1 or 3 years. There'll definitely be two referendums. And it's about whether or not the economy can withstand... I was about to say whether the comedy can withstand that. And I think that's probably a Freudian slip because, I mean, as we were discussing shortly before we went on air, like the themes for political comedy are like a sort of holding pattern of planes above a city, like the personality change, but they are essentially the same thing circling, just waiting for something to land, you know, and hopefully this election something will land, you know, there'll be a majority and we can just, you know, press on.
Yeah, we'll see.
Andy, anything else stood out for you?
Well, it's not a political thing at all, actually, but it's 40 years since The Life of Brian. And there was a debate recently at a big sort of conference in the Barbican that I was part of, and we all sort of re-watched Monty Python's Life of Brian just to see if it stood the test of time. And what was really interesting, I think, is that it's often seen as a bit of a criticism of Christianity and a sort of, you know, a sort of piss take around religion. And if you look at what John Cleese actually said about it, he said, look, this is a satire around dogma. So it's not blasphemous because it's not criticising religion, but it is heretical because it attacks dogma. And you look back at the film now, 40 years ago, and the sort of jokes in it are so current. And I'm sorry, I can't help myself, but I've got to read a couple of
middle-aged bloke quoting...
No,
turn up for the books.
Can't help myself.
You can fast forward about approximately 17 seconds and we'll get on with the rest of this.
Why are you always going on about women, Stan? I want to be one. From now on, I want you to call me Loretta. Why, Stan? I want to have babies. You can't have babies. Don't you oppress me. I'm not oppressing you. You haven't got a womb. Where's the fetus going to gestate? You're going to keep it in a box? I've got an idea. Suppose you agree that he can't actually have babies because he hasn't actually got a womb, which is no one's fault, not even the Romans, but he can have the right to have babies. And that...
It's quite prescient.
It is very prescient, but I also think that it's... What I really like about that joke is it's trying to take something that's utterly absurd and find a way of fitting it within the dogma so you can have the right to have babies even if you can't have it. Mm. And there's so much of that that's going on right now. that it's something that people say that is so jars against your own personal experience, or that seems just so beyond the pale, and then we find a way of just sort of very rapidly bringing it into common currency.
Yeah, I mean, that has been a weird feature of this age, is the way that what are, by most standards, quite cranky ideas are given quite a lot of credibility. And I don't know what that is. I think it's partly because I think companies and governments and public figures are running scared of trending. So yeah, they're running scared of this, particularly on Twitter. So there's this social media platform which isn't actually used by that many people in the broader sense. 16% of Brits have got a profile. Only half of them use it regularly. Of that half, how many engage with it politically? But that's their fear. That's their fear. And we look back and I think it's an odd time when they were, like, government and corporate policy was in part formed by this fear of of just being a few words next to a hashtag.
It is weird, isn't it? It's almost like you can't really keep up with it. I think right now there's actually no point in trying to make sense of a lot of what's going on. But you do have to learn the language to use. Mm. So you've got to find the way of not making mistakes and just finding a way of going along with what people are saying, but actually trying to make sense of some of this stuff. It's just too much mental
energy.
What
I've noticed, certainly in the last 6 months, is that friends of mine that would have always identified as people on the liberal left and are also finding it. And, you know, they're like, I wouldn't say this in public, you know, or you know, don't hold me to this, don't quote me, but I find that mad, you know, whether it's around trans issues or whether it's around things to do with the EU. So I think that, like, what wokeism is, I think, broad. I don't think it will ever have, like, broad cachet. I don't think most people see it. You know, it's partly where the podcast comes from, is that the comedy world, you could be revolutionary by just giving a voice to fairly broadly held opinions. That's what's odd about it, is to go, you know what, when I saw that cricketer who's 6'4" and hasn't transitioned into being a female in any biological sense, hitting sixes over the bowler's head repeatedly, it didn't seem fair. And he goes, shit, this guy's edgy. You know, it looked like bullying. You know what I mean? Like, if you was to, like you sort of, like, utilise that level of physical advantage, it would just look like a dad in the park, just like, putting his son through his paces. So, and I feel like it's quite secure to say that. Like, you know, like, there's been no attempt for a biological transition. So this cricketer who won a female cricketer of the year, you know, has all the physical advantages that go with being male.
Yes.
But has just self-ID'd.
But you can't... But it's difficult to say that, because you do just get on real tripwires, don't you?
I mean, it's the most likely thing that I admit, to my shame, that I've probably swerved certain discussions on it. But that cricketer one, I thought, you know, why am I... And part of the reason I do that is not through covering my own arse in terms of work. It's just about bandwidth, you know. Like, you have one of those days where suddenly... And you've got to do that stuff on Twitter. It's the one day where you're at home with your wife and kid, and then you're just fighting people. So it's...
Yeah.
You have to ration... Because in the truth, in terms of, like, you know, what broadcasters in the comedy industry wants, it wouldn't be a problem for me to talk about those subjects. It's more a case of how much does it eat into my time and mental energy to deal with these idiots.
Yeah.
Well, you could never say that we avoid difficult subjects, and just to be clear, if you've been offended by any of the issues surrounding the transgender debate, we will be publishing Andy and Jeff's home addresses at the end of this podcast. Now, we at Spectator Life, we're running a bit of a project at the moment. Andy is collating a bullshit dictionary where he takes common words and terms that are being misused and misappropriated in common parlance and breaks them down and studies how it is that they're being abused and misused. So, Jeff, I was wondering, is there any particular word that captures the zeitgeist of the moment that particularly stands out for you that you think deserves to be in a bullshit dictionary?
I think Emma Watson made a strong case, I think it was a week or so ago, where she used the phrase self-partnered instead of being single. And she said, you know, I'm not single, I'm self-partnered. Now, the idea, one of the things here is that kind of Hollywood types and kind of liberal actor, you know, bohemian set, they can't just do what normal people do, you know. They can't just be said, they have to do what you do, but better and more interesting, right? Same with Gwyneth with her unconscious uncoupling or what. So what she's done is part of the implication that comes from a sort of feminist thing is, like, I'm totally okay with this. I'm so okay with being single. It's self-partnered, actually. But the net effect of it is the opposite, I think. Because if I had a female friend that recently became single and was telling me how it's so fine and that she's actually calling it self-partnering, I'd go, she's not over him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, all this crap about... Yeah, The problem with these kind of phrases is they don't ultimately alter the reality of the thing. You know, so you can give it new names, but being single for most people is fine, but you're still on the lookout for somebody to be with, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? She can't escape that destiny any better than the rest of us. And you know, when she next gets a wedding invite, that's when it really gets the sharp end of it.
It is really odd, isn't it? Because she is trying to do that. She's trying to say, "Look, I'm all right. I'm fine. I'm single. I'm not being defined by my relationship with somebody else." And actually, single is a really good way of using a word that doesn't define you in your relationship to somebody else. It just means you're single. It's not in any way. It's not like married or divorced or what have you. And it's really surreal to then invent a phrase, which is this self-partnering, to define yourself in relationship
to yourself.
Yeah.
But maybe it kind of reflects the narcissistic age that we live in. You know, like that is then more important than anything else. Like, how am I getting on with me?
Do I still love myself? Do I really love myself?
But it's a default state, so it doesn't need to be referred to explicitly. That's what's so daft about it. I remember, like, there was that thing in, when you used to watch, like, game shows in the 80s. When they actually had normal people on rather than celebrities?
Yeah.
And they'd say to a woman, "What do you do?" She'd say, "I'm a housewife." And then there's that weird period where they started saying, "I'm a domestic engineer."
That's not true, surely.
Yeah, there was a brief period that happened. And then it was we adopted the American stay-at-home mum, which is obviously, from bloke's point of view, is a sad sort of like women defined from their relationship to the bloke to the kids, you know, which is probably how they see it, to be fair, but it's just a sign of the fall of grace that we have suffered, Andy. But I always thought that it was a bit of a reach, like domestic engineer going, calm off it. I remember my mum adopted that for a while, and she tried to like do rosters and rotas in the house and stuff. I mean, none of us were having it. I'm just like,
did you change what you called her? Is it mum?
No.
Or did you call her engineer? I mean, you call it Isambard?
Life giver.
Kingdom,
like, life I don't call my mother beautiful. Mother because it's too loaded. Life giver because it's gendered, isn't it?
Yeah, life giver. You've given
something almost a bit religious about that.
Yes.
Giving your mother the praise that she deserves. Life giver every morning.
And then, equally, men should have a slightly less... They shouldn't have an equal status phrase. It should be, like, kind of...
Just obstacle.
Like, just something that implies the scale of physical endeavour on his part. You know, one person, kind of 2 minutes, and then other person grew a human. So maybe we do need to, like... Yeah, maybe we need to take... Yeah, we need to give life giver.
We do. I
life
think,
giver day.
I think you're right. Just, you know, a life giver and just... Ass, is a much better reflection of the reality.
It's interesting talking about gender at the moment is that it's become like this edgy topic, whereas it used to be the staple of stand-up, like the difference between men and women. But I do believe, it's weird that you could say that, like, right, so salmons know to go back upstream, you know, to breed. So that exists in their brain, but we don't know where. We can't tell exactly which bit of their brain or how. So the idea that there's not similarly coded stuff in men and women, I find that, I think that'll be, one day we'll realise soon that we're actually depressingly coded in that respect. Not everybody, of course, but the vast majority, enough to make jokes about it anyway.
Well, I think when Emma realises that, I think maybe she can redefine herself as maybe pre-mum.
Yeah.
Pre-life giver.
Yes. But then she decides not to have a kid. She'll need
then
a phrase.
She's taker of life.
She is
giver of life, taker of life.
Which you need a phrase that lets her off the
hook. I think life denier.
Life denier.
Perhaps. Self-loving life denier.
We do now sound like the pro-life lobby. That does life. It feels like we've given them a really dark idea.
Life ambiguous. Yeah. How about that?
Questioning the trans orthodoxy. We're very pro-life. Yes. This has gone down a direction that we weren't necessarily intending.
Yeah. Quick. Yes. Run away.
So which one do you want to put? What word do you want to put into the bullshit dictionary then? Well, do you want life giver, self-partnered, or would you go for something else?
I like self-partnering, but also if you are, because it's a bit schizophrenic, isn't it? Because it's like, you know, I have sort of separated myself and I've chosen to partner with myself because I love myself so much more. So
other people?
Well, no, you're defining yourself
if you're schizophrenic
with yourself, not with other people. You see, that's what it's all about. So the sort of conversations must go along the lines of, have you put the bins out? I think that's your turn. Do you love me? Yeah, I love you. Do you really love me? I love myself.
It would only be true self-partnering if there was a domestic and a falling out and grudges were held inexplicably.
That's right. But there needs to be a misunderstanding between both of your halves, don't there, for it to really work?
Yeah.
Like a proper misunderstanding.
I was going to volunteer an idea for the bullshit dictionary, which is feeds in quite well, actually, because I've always thought the whole thing about being single, being self-partnered or whatever, is it's just going to be a real lack of diversity in your day-to-day life. And I think diversity is certainly a word that sort of defines a lot of what's going on at the moment. And you, after all, Jeff, have just been appointed to the BBC's Committee on Diversity.
Well, yeah, I've been doing it a little while and stuff. It got slightly over-egged. It doesn't happen that often. It's just a group of people that meet up.
Go to the pub.
About three or four times a year.
Yeah.
And I just sort of say 5 minutes of stuff. It did seem like I'd landed this job where I could actually like steer appointments and stuff like that. So I was quite naive in that respect. I mean, it was an interesting one, obviously, with my politics. The idea about diversity panels and quotas and stuff like that, obviously, for somebody right of centre, that creates a problem, you know, like, because instinctively I have potentially have issues with that. The point is, I suppose, is that those meetings are going to happen anyway, right? So there needs to be somebody talking up for, you know, every side of things, because it is everyone's going for their piece of the pie, you know, and trying to create influence and traction. And if there's not somebody speaking up for, you know, a cohort of people as big as working class in this country, then you know, things will move on quite quickly. So, and I think that they're aware of that, and I think that that's why I'm there. One of the things that I certainly had in my mind when I went there was about not just on screen, because the BBC, one of the issues for it, you know, somebody like me going there, is the ethos and the atmosphere and the tone of the place. So it's not, you know, there's this hope for every person that you see on the screen. It's almost like a soldier on foot patrol. For anybody that actually carries a gun, there's a much wider group of people to get them out on patrol, right? So so there's loads of jobs in TV and at the BBC where you can earn good money and have an interest in life, and I just don't feel like there's much representation there. That was, in a way, I was less concerned about on screen. I was thinking, because that's only a tiny percentage of the jobs available. And also, you can change that a lot quicker. Do you know what I mean? You just stick, you know, on the one show, you go, all right, we'll stick that kind of person on the one show. You can change the percentages a lot quicker. But the wider industry is the issue.
I think it was Andrew Doyle who made the point. He said if you wanted to actually just sort out all the sort of diversity inclusion issues in one go, you just do a... The BBC reflects the schools that people went from. Came from. So publicly educated is around 7% of the population. As you just say, right, BBC employees, only 7% can come from private education, and actually you'd sort out all the diversity and inclusion stuff in one shot.
Mm. Well, also, you know, like a lot of what you're talking about, underprivileged, right? So, yeah, like statistically, a lot of, like, you know, ethnic minorities and trans people are more likely to be working class anyway. So if you lead with...
That's right.
Class,
yeah.
You're probably implicitly going to sort out a number of those things as it stands. So that's, you know, but everyone the thing is, I, you know, in this world and this podcast I'm on, it'd be easy to kind of like trash what they do, but they're decent people and stuff, and they're very they've been very accommodating. In a way, like a lot of things, I do think it's a shame that in the TV world that it took something like Brexit for people to actually start thinking about stuff like this. I think, how could it, you know? But the point is that there are people thinking about it now. And my one fear, I suppose, is that if you don't make enough progress now, is that once Brexit's done, and we'll go back to the old ways. That's my fear.
Yeah, all, you know, seals over again.
Yeah, the
imperative.
Well, yeah, the imperative to make changes in broadcasting may pass. That's my concern.
Now, all of these past events and words and theories are driven at their heart by people. So it would be remiss of us to end this podcast without discussing some of the people who have really shaped the agenda in the last few weeks. So I was going to ask, is there any one individual that's really stood out for you recently?
Clearly, and a long way, somebody's achieved something that I think is worthy of credit. I think Prince Andrew, for uniting a huge global audience in the view that he made an absolute tit of himself. And without, I mean, it's quite something to have, like, I've done TV, I've got things that have got varying reactions, but sometimes you look at the reaction online, you think, well, did some people like this, did some people, so you kind of calibrate it. Nobody thought he did well, like, nobody on planet Earth thought he did anything other than, like, incriminate himself and seem like a weird, creepy guy.
Yeah.
And I think you just have to doff your hat to that. That's hard to do, you know, that is...
It takes a special upbringing, doesn't it? And
yes,
a special background to be that insulated from any sense of what people might think of you.
Told his mum, didn't he? I think it went all right. I think it went all right. He told his mum.
How does it normally go for
him? He just knows that she's not on Twitter, so he's just like, no, smashed it. Absolutely crushed it. It was interesting watching what he did. I think somebody said to him, mention that you served in the Falklands. People like that. The British public will like that. And they do, right?
Yeah.
But not in that way. Not in like the sweaty...
I was going to say it was a bit a Vietnam vet shaking, shouting, you don't know, man, you weren't there. This is not the moment to come across that. This is not the thing.
He was just hitting his little bullet points, wasn't he, from the PR briefing meeting, but hitting them in all the wrong orders.
That's right. It was so convoluted as well, wasn't it? I think there was a piece in The Spectator recently that Dr. Roger Henderson did about this thing called anhydrosis, which is where people stop sweating. And his initial point was that is very, very unlikely to be created by an adrenaline rush when you've been shot at in a helicopter.
Yeah. It might explain, though, his need then to go out partying for the next 20 years as a medical response, as anything. His doctor's going to have a bit of fun, do something that gets your heart rate.
Sweat. Take some pills, get yourself out to Ibiza, just... get stuck in, and
that's what he was doing. Get to Woking.
Although that photo, I was looking at that photo. You know the one that he said was doctored, like with his arm around that girl. There's something slightly odd about that photo. But then I was wondering, is that because like the moment someone says something's doctored, you look at their kind of outline and their periphery?
What bit of it looks odd to you?
It's just the distance that his hand is around.
Like he's got a really long arm.
She's incredibly slim, so that could account for that. And also, the hand is every bit as weirdly red as the rest of his body.
But not sweating, though.
No. I mean, it's just creepy.
It's one of those things, isn't it, though? Nowadays, everybody's going to be able to get away with saying, oh, that picture's doctored, because that's becoming more of a...
deep fake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what you can also say is, I was in Woking Pizza Express, right? Mm. So any excuse now. You know, I wasn't there. I was in Woking Pizza Express. Yeah. It's a new phrase, isn't it? Because
that's a sort of code that could be.
Yes,
that'd be an urban dictionary.
Down woking.
Andy, anybody who's stuck out for you particularly in the last couple of weeks?
Well, no one who went through that excruciating public interview, but I did meet a vicar during the Extinction Rebellion protest in Trafalgar Square. In fact, there were 30 of them. They were called Christians for Climate Action, and they were lined up in front of the National Gallery on Trafalgar Square. And next to me, there were another 30 people meditating with boards around them saying, you know, end is nigh, the world's going to die and what have you. And a bunch of sort of people who looked like the sort of dregs of Stonehenge Free Festival in about 1982 doing some sort of odd dancing. It was an utterly surreal experience. They were genuinely, the Vicars for Climate Action, about 30 of them on these steps, were genuinely reading from the Book of Revelation about the apocalypse. And then there was a guy came up to me who was a vicar part of this, and I said, you know, this just feels like some sort of early sort of Christian, weird sort of religious thing. And in fact, it made me think of going back to Monty Python, you know, the gourd, the shoe, you know, follow Brian. And he said, no, it's all about the science. It's all about the science. And I just thought the science, what they call the science, is almost like the new ultimate truth, the new sort of revelation that we should all follow.
I mean, I remember being a kid, like, you know, I remember watching TVAM and Anne Diamond talking about the likelihood of nuclear annihilation. And it made me very anxious as a kid. You know, every time I used to hear planes flying overhead, I thought, could that be, is that it? Yeah, I think there's probably other underlying anxiety issues. But when you have like, a big ticket issue to pin all that onto, I mean, I just wonder how it's going to affect kids. Because like, if you totally buy into it, and in a way, it's another one of those things where there's a certain strand of the media who will automatically gravitate towards these ideas. Yeah. You know, if you're a young person looking at that, and looking at who has fully subscribed to it, what do you think? You think, oh shit, they're right, that we are facing apocalypse, you know, like, and there's no scientists, no respected scientists saying that it's going to be as bleak as Extinction Rebellion or the head god, what's his name?
Roger Hallam.
So there's very few people saying it's going to be like that, and yet they're the ones that have the flaw.
It must be quite frightening for the kids. When you were younger, and you said, oh, that plane's going to... is that dropping a bomb, mum? She'd go, don't be so daft. That's not going to happen.
Well, part of the reason I had anxiety problems, she was the kind of mum that would go, well, I don't know, let's see. Yeah.
Might be.
That was part of the issue.
Actually, either way, it's not an issue.
Actually, Jeff, have a really good look. Yeah. Can you see the undercarriage? Is it like, okay, is there a bomb coming out? I don't know.
She used to talk about what she'd do in the 3 minute warning.
What was she going to
do? She was like, that was why she wanted me and my sister at the same school together.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So she's going to do like, what?
Yeah, but she'd sprint there, I'd imagine. It's easy to see now.
To die together.
Yes, we'd all be kind of shadows on a wall together.
I don't think
the life giver works in mysterious ways.
Yeah, I think that we've learned a lot about child psychology, and I'm not sure I'd share those thoughts with my son now. But that's the point, isn't it? I wouldn't share that thought with my son now. So all these parents that are kind of verbatim repeating these lurid claims by Extinction Rebellion, you got to think, is that wise as well? But it may, you know, it makes them feel so, you know, it's great, you know. Melissa went on strike from school and went on a march. And you know what those parents, I bet the first time that their kid did that, they were like, yeah, they were delighted because they could talk about it to other similarly minded parents. But then I bet like the third and fourth time they were like, you're not, we have paid for a lot of tuition here.
Can you just like go back to school?
Yeah, and you've got SATs coming up and it's either you get to the good school, we have to pay to put you in a good school. So we're really going to have to shut down your ideology now.
Yeah.
Having sparked it.
Yeah. And we're doing loads of recycling. And by the way, we don't have to go on holiday this year. So that's what we're going to do.
Yes.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on That's Life. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
You can catch Jeff on the next stage of his tour at a range of venues across the UK, which continues into January. You can
It's January and beyond.
Yeah. January and beyond. Yeah. It's a very successful show and it will be going well into 2020.
April.
Provided that his show has not been nationalised under Jeremy Corbyn's government.
Yes.
You can
come
buy
to the bit
tickets.
Where we're outside the EU. I'll be able to import jokes from like the Philippines.
Where can we buy tickets from?
You can buy tickets. Either just follow me on Twitter or go to Live Nation.
You can also follow us if you're stuck for things to do on Twitter at AndyShaw1 or at Benedict Spence. That's all for this episode. Do join us next time for more wine and frivolity on the next Spectator Life podcast.